until 3:30, so I would like to call this meeting of the Utilities and Sewers Committee to order, and the clerk will call the roll of members present.
Tracus?
Present.
Sinek?
Here.
Vavirka?
Here.
Very good. We have a full committee, and I want to thank everybody for participating today. If anyone does have a question concerning any of the topics or anything else utility-related to come before the committee, you're welcome to email them to Debbie Beal. Her email address is publicly stated, as well as being shared on Engineer Ram's screen right now. So, Don, boy, you anticipated the command quite well. Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Certainly. So, the first order of business, we do have some guests. We want to thank them for being on today. We'd like to get an update on the United States Army Corps of Engineers project on the Cuyahoga River levee and floodwall project, which is at Old Rockside Road in Cuyahoga River. I believe this emanates from the year 2006, was when I think we ended up starting to consider this project. I think July of 2006, the heavy floodings that were in the area kind of precipitated this. We made a request to U.S. Representative Steve Lacharette at the time. Now it is David Joyce. And in the subsequent years, we've had the support of both the Representative Joyce, United States Senator Sherrod Brown, and Senator Rob Portman on this project. I think the original intent was somewhere in the neighborhood of 2,600-foot earthen levee and a concrete flood wall. We have not had a lengthy discussion on this topic since the year 2017. So I know Don said that we're getting closer on this, and if it's with permission of the committee, I would like to turn the meeting over to Engineer Ram and our guests from the United States Army, and to go over the current events and to go over the current configuration of the project, costs, anticipations, etc.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to start with a quick introduction. We do have three representatives from the Army Corps sitting in with us this afternoon. We have Russ Brandenburg. He is the project manager for the project. We have Laura Ortiz. She's the planning formulator. She has been involved with this project since the inception of the study. We also have Paul Coca. He is the hydrologic and hydraulic engineering team leader who was involved with the hydraulics of the study. So I will stop sharing my screen, and Russ will move forward with his PowerPoint.
All right, Don, can you hear me, Don?
Yes.
All right, so I'm going to try to, we don't use Zoom for us, so I'm going to try to pull it up on mine and share the screen, and we'll get on our presentation. So while I'm doing that, I just want to say thank you so much for having us here to talk about this, and we look forward to presenting this. We got about a 10 to 15 minute presentation, and we definitely want to address any questions that may arise from that presentation or anything else. So I'm just trying to share my screen here.
We understand. We've allocated about 1 hour for this entire meeting, and so you're welcome to take as much time as you can.
I'm trying to show my screen. So, Don, I might see if you might be able to, or Laura, one of my team members, because it's not letting me share. The share button's not coming up. So,
Debbie, have you?
Yes, I let all the panelists share. Oops.
What's that, Don?
I was going to ask if Debbie Beal, the clerk.
Yes, all the panelists can share.
Okay.
All right, so let me try it again. Okay, right there, ready. Let me see. Okay, I'm trying to share that. Can everybody see the PowerPoint?
Yes.
Yes. Yes, we can.
Okay, excellent. All right. Thank you very much. Okay, thanks for letting me do it, taking the time. We, like I say, we normally use Microsoft Teams, so Zoom's not really something we use a lot, so I appreciate it. So, all right, excellent. So, as Don said, my name is Russ Brandenburg. I'm the project manager, and with me I have Laura Ortiz, Paul Coca. We have about 10 or so slides here. We want to kind of go through this, and then we'll pop it open for questions. But please, if you have questions during this presentation, please jump in and we'll address them at that time as well. So to move along, and it was mentioned that this project has been going on since 2006, and Laura Ortiz has been pretty much on this project since the inception. This is a continuing authority project under our CAP program. It's section 205, and I'm going to kind of turn it over to Laura in a second, but just to know that a lot of projects are, we looked at a lot of areas within your independence and with values, so we do have some history that we want to talk about. But having said that, Laura, if you're on the line, and I do believe you're there, can you jump in and present this slide?
Sure. Thank you for hosting us. During the feasibility study, we looked at several locations within the city of Independence. Each site, we looked at several different combinations of plans. And during the feasibility, we used a screening process, which was primarily based on benefits and costs. And as part of that process, we did extensive interviews with the business owners in the city of Independence. With these types of studies, with the better information you have from the community and the stakeholders and the people that are impacted by the flooding, you are able to formulate a better project. And not only does it help with helping with the formulation of a better project, it also helps with the justification of a project. So through the screening process, it came down that the area along the Cuyahoga River, starting at Old Rockside Road and extending north, was the only area that was feasible for a flood risk management project. And at that site, we looked at a combination of plans to include a series of either levees and flood walls, or flood walls. What we tried to do is, in this area, real estate is at a premium, and also consider the real estate, but also the structural alternative, which is going to provide the best opportunity. Russ, can you go to slide number 3, please?
Yeah. There you are, Laura.
All right. So what we came up with was a levee flood wall system. The levee is 2,600 feet in length, and the flood wall is approximately 720 feet in length. And that starts right at Old, the flood wall starts at up at Old Rockside Road and goes up. And generally, you use flood walls when real estate is a concern per se, and then you use flood wall or levee system because levees are less expensive to construct. As part of this plan, we do have 3 closure structures. In addition, as part of the planning process, one of the questions we had to answer in our comments was if anybody was trapped when this project is constructed, is there an out for them? And as you know, along that southern area of Old Rockside Road, there is that road that goes up to the cemetery. So that provided like an egress in the case that it's needed. We did look at, and it's very hard to do non-structural flood proofing in these areas, this area, because the water gets a little bit too high. So it was recommended that we go with the levee flood wall system, and we had an extremely strong benefit to cost ratio. As part of the benefit to cost ratio, we had to look at the benefit to cost ratio in 2 different ways. One was with all crane, and the other one was without all crane. Regardless of of the presence of all crane, this project was still positive. And I focused on that because with the Corps of Engineers, we are not allowed to do projects for single beneficiaries. And we did that to make sure for the public good that we were doing our job. Does anybody have any questions for me at this time?
I do. This is Jim Trakas. I just was curious, could you define what a closure structure is?
Yes, the closure structure is generally it's like a metal system, and then you put like a series of like stop logs in. So if you know a flood is coming, the crew would like put this in so it prevents the flood wall from going, any flood waters from going through. If you could like, if you were put two metal posts going vertical, then you would have horizontal slats going up. I hope that's a good enough visual.
Yes, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Excellent. Thank you, Laura. I'm going to continue on. So the next slide here is the project status. And it was mentioned earlier that this has been going on since 2006, and the last touch point made the briefing with us was back in 2017. At that 2017 time, we were pretty much wrapping up the feasibility report, which is where this alternative came out of, and that was wrapping up that the federal cost share agreement that we initially signed back in that 2008-2009 time frame, and that was the outcome of that federal cost share agreement was the feasibility report. So right now, the project status, what I've been working with, Laura, myself, Paul, and the rest of our team have been working with Don and everybody else at the city here, has been working to move forward with the next agreement that we would sign. That would be the project partnership agreement. And that project partnership agreement would allow us to partner up again and move forward with design of this feasibility project, and then actually implement the project as well, so get through to construction. So that would be our final agreement, and that would be what we go through with construction. So that's basically where we are, and internally, we have a draft project partnership agreement that is rotating around for review. I believe Don has it, and possibly some of you may have seen that draft project partnership agreement. Once we get buy-in and approval from you all here, we'll be able to take that project partnership agreement and have it reviewed at our division down in Cincinnati. And once they approve that, we would be able to execute that. Usually that's about a 2 or so month turnaround once we get it down to our division for review. So if once we get the approval from you to move forward and a couple other documents that we need to finalize that report, we'd be able to probably execute this in spring, late winter, spring time frame. And that would allow us to move forward with that project partnership agreement, allow us to start receiving federal dollars and working towards the design process of this flood wall levee system that we've put together in our feasibility report. So that's where we stand project status wise. I'm going to pass it over to Paul Coca to really delve into the hydraulics and H&H standpoint of this project, which is pretty much the primary focus of what we're doing for our project conception here. So Paul, I'm going to go to the next slide and turn it over to you.
Okay, thanks, Russ. So I have five slides. Obviously, you know, the potential impacts of the project on the floodplain are of definite concern. And so these slides mostly deal with that, both in terms of the extent of the floodplain post-project, the extent of the floodplain considering the bridge replacement projects as well. And the impacts in the park in Valley View, and not only in terms of the floodplain extents, but also the changes in water surface elevations that would result. So this first slide is showing just the impacts of the project on the floodplain. And the area that's in blue is the existing floodplain that will be protected, the existing area that will be protected. These are the 100-year inundation results. So that area would all be protected. The area, the shading in pink, is the increase in inundation that would result from the project in the area of Cuyahoga Valley National Park. And that rise right there, or in between the two bridges is almost 3 inches. And if you go to the next slide. And this is a little bit further upstream, about a mile upstream, on the right-hand side of the river, the Lombardo Park area of Valley View, and basically the same inundation mapping, again, the existing conditions versus with project, seeing a little, the increase in the flood inundation extent for the 100-year event. The maximum increase in width was 40 feet, and the maximum increase in water surface elevation was 0.06 feet, or just under an inch. Next slide, please. And then we, the Cuyahoga Valley National Park was concerned about this increase in inundation. But we are aware too, with the bridge reconstruction, that there was going to be actually a potential positive impact from the removal of those piers. And Old Rockside Road, that replacement project will replace, eliminate that center pier, which does accumulate debris. For Rockside Road, there's currently 4 piers, one of which is in the river. That one would be removed, and there will just be then 2 piers on the sides. There's currently 4. We wanted to consider the impacts of debris on those piers, and again, this dual impact of not only the flood risk management projects raising, but the bridges lowering the water surface elevation. So this is the inundation extent. In this case, the color scheme is reversed, so the pink is showing existing conditions, and the purple is showing the conditions for both with the levee flood wall project and the bridge replacement projects. So we're seeing a shrinking of the flood inundation extents. Next slide, please. And so this is just a very simple schematic of what will happen with the water surface elevation for a 100-year flood event for these various scenarios. The existing conditions, which is in the middle there, if we add the levee flood wall, it goes up. You replace Rockside Road Bridge, it goes down a bit. And then when you replace the new Rockside Road Bridge, goes down even more. And basically, it's an overall reduction. These are water surface elevations at 1,200 feet upstream of Rockside Road Bridge. And again, the numbers here in terms of the rise for the existing conditions up to the levee flood wall, it's a little bit more significant there because we're considering debris in all these scenarios that are shown here. In a FEMA regulation, or FEMA floodplain, regulatory floodplain context, you don't typically consider debris unless a community person that actually requests that FEMA do that. In this context, we wanted to consider the actual impacts of eliminating these piers. This is an effort you're taking to be, good stewards of the environment and the floodplain by eliminating those piers. We wanted to reflect that impact to, reduce that floodplain impact and be more consistent with other rivers in the floodplain. Next slide, please. And again, previously I mentioned the FEMA regulatory context. So we have an existing FEMA floodplain and flood water surface profiles or base flood elevations. When we modeled, when we calibrated our model to the 2006 event, which was a 200-year event, we noticed, and we had really good data, there's not only the gauge, at the Independence gauge, which is just downstream Rockside Road, or Old Rockside Road Bridge, but also we had USGS high watermark data from the event, so we had a good data set to calibrate against. We calibrated within about a half of a foot. And when we did that and then ran the model for the 100-year event, we found that our 100-year water surface profile was actually lower than the existing base flood elevations in the FEMA flood insurance study by about 1.8 feet. So simply taking our modeling data and reporting it to FEMA and having them incorporate it in a revised flood insurance study, we would expect to see that the floodplain extents would be reduced and that base flood elevation or 100-year water surface profile would also be lowered by as much as 1.8 feet. With the levee flood wall project, again, considering the maximum 0.24, again, this is in between Rockside Road Bridge and Old Rockside Road Bridge, we'd see a rise of 0.24 feet. And then with the bridge rebuild projects, we could lower that as much as 0.8 of a foot. Again, because that previous analysis where I showed lowering of 0.8 feet, that considered debris and the impact of debris in the piers, in a regulatory floodplain context, that would be considered, so that reduction would be lower. So giving a range here, we'd expect a net reduction after all these projects, and we remap the floodplain, which is a requirement of this project, we would expect to see a lowering of the base flood elevations with a 100-year water surface profile by on the order of 2 feet. That's all I have in terms of H&H, and happy to answer any questions.
Thanks, Paul. This is back to Russ again. I'm going to move on to the last slide, but before I go to this slide, I just want to piggyback off what Paul was saying. And I mentioned that 2018 is when we wrapped up our feasibility report and passed it along, and obviously we're winding down 2020, going into 2021. For the better part of 2 years, we've been working with the park, and Paul did mention it, and I believe some of you may, most of you may be aware, the park was had some concerns about this, especially on their part of the property. And once we were able to show them the combined projects reduction, that's what brought them back on board for this project. So for the last couple of years, we've been spending a lot of time working with the park and bringing them on board as a partner and ensuring they were, all those concerns on their end were alleviated. So, but having said that, that kind of dovetails into this slide here. I know Don has mentioned in the last few meetings we've had over the last year and a half, 2 years, that those bridge repair projects are replacement, however, are primary for you, the city, and they would be at the forefront, whereas the flood wall would be more of the back burner or after the fact.
Good, how are you?
And we understand that. So this chart here kind of just, I put this together maybe a couple months ago, and I believe most everybody here has seen this. So this just kind of shows a lot of various ways we can do touch points on getting funding to us and how we can understandably have your bridge projects work while we're still designing this flood wall levee system and be ready to hopefully implement sometime in that fiscal FY 2023 time frame. But the main thing I do want to point out here, and you see the graphs and everything in the fiscal years, but the total project cost is approximately $7.5 million. In today's dollars, obviously, if we go up years out, inflation would need to be included in that, and obviously we're looking at a 65-35 share with us in the Fed side, having 65%, and you as a sponsor having 35%. And as from a strictly cash standpoint, that would amount to 5% estimated to be presented in cash only. The rest could be real estate, working kind, and things of that nature. So there's a many different ways for that 35% from your sponsor standpoint be provided to us. And I wrote those out here under the design phase. If you look at the table here, it doesn't have to be all at once. It could be at multiple iterations. And that was just, I picked the breakdown for separate since it was the easiest from a math standpoint. But that can be in different variations as well. The one thing I do want to point out, that once we get past design and we're ready to contract it out, that's when all the funding and everything would have to be in place before we go to the contracting portion and actually award this to construct. So that's kind of that the big takeaway on this slide here. Like I said, I think most everybody here has pretty much seen this. And the one thing we do have here is that Laura mentioned at the beginning that BCR, that benefit to cost ratio, is about 14.6. Usually we try to get our projects over a threshold of 1, and we're at 14, so this is one of the strongest BCRs we've seen. I don't want to say within the least Buffalo district, our district might be 4Y, but it's a very strong project, and that lends itself to the way we are set up. Our funding is at a national level. This project will compete with other projects that are vying for funding across the nation within that Section 205 for the flood wall projects. Right now, this is a fairly fully funded authority, which means that here within the near term, we within our district, within Buffalo, the leadership, and myself included, feel that over the next near term, getting funding for this project would be very likely we'd be able to do that here in the next 1 to 2 years. We start going out years, 3, 4, 5 years, and that becomes very gray in the fact that we, you know, don't know what it's going to look like in that the funding for this Section 205 authority, say 5 years from now. Well, you know, if Congress puts that funding in place, you know, that could change and priorities could change. So as I say, that BCR is really strong, and that lends itself nicely to competing very strongly for funding at this point in time, because there is, as I say, adequate funding for the Section 205 project. So having said that, I know we've spent about 15 to 20 minutes briefing, and we've taken one question, but I want to, you know, say this is the end of our presentation, and we want to, Don, I don't know if we'll kick it over to you and take any questions from the board or however you guys want to do it, but we're definitely glad to address any questions you may or may not have.
Thank you, Russ. Yeah, I do believe.
Don, can you stop here to shoot the screen?
I would leave it up for now until we're done.
Okay, excellent.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, if there are any questions either from the participants here or anybody from the chat that you'd like to entertain.
Thank you. Yeah, well, I know we have 2 through chat, but any members of the committee or anyone else have any questions before we entertain those?
Yeah, Jim?
Yes, go ahead.
What's the lifetime of this type of project? In other words, what's its effective lifetime?
Laura might be able to dive in a little deeper, but typically we design our projects for 50-year life expectancies. Or is there anything clarifying on that you may or may not want to jump on, or Paul? I think I was correct. It's about typically 50 years is what we design for.
Because
probably 105, that's good.
Because the project includes flood gates, responsible for the maintenance of the gates?
So typically once we design a project, we pass it over to you, the city. We would, in doing so, we have an operations and maintenance manual we pass along. Now, having said that, we do initially have some inspections that we would inspect and help make sure things are running properly. And there are some other caveats that if it's not constructed properly, there's opportunities for that to fall back on, not on you guys. But typically, in out years, 4 or 5 years from now, 10 years from now, that would rely on the city to maintain that project.
And ultimately, who pulls the cord for the determining of whether it would be a flood that would require the gates to be shut?
That's a good question. Laura, Paul, are you? Do we have a? Is that FEMA?
Sure.
I'm gonna go ahead, Paul.
Sure. So that would be covered in the operations and maintenance manual. You know, we give you some guidance in terms of when you would close the closure structures. So, you know, looking at the hydrograph, you know, it can rise pretty quickly. So, you know, we want to be ahead of the curve on that. You'd be tracking the gauges, so, you know, luckily the Cuyahoga has a pretty good collection of gauges. There's the one in Independence, of course, and upstream, Jate, and other ones further upstream, so we do some kind of combination of that. There's also the River Forecast Center forecast water level, so all that would be considered.
And thanks, Paul. I do want to mention in regards to the closures, I know the park mentioned that since one of the closures goes across their railroad, they would be interested in being the responsible party for that particular closure instruction. So that would be something that can be worked out as we move forward and discuss it when it's designed and implemented, but that they have intended or, you know, stated they're interested in doing that for that particular part of their property.
Once the gates are down, in other words, we have a flood situation, is there any amount of infiltration? And if there is, then is there any kind of a pump system involved in it to keep it dry?
Sure. So as part of the design, we would do an interior flooding analysis. We've actually started in that a little bit. It is a relatively small drainage area that is would be contained within the levee and flood wall. It's a little bit less than, I think, a square mile. So we have an idea of those flows that could be generated within that area. We haven't yet determined whether or not a pump station would be necessary. The other thing that we consider is coincident flood frequency. So you've got a big rainfall event, you're going to get sort of a quick runoff in the interior area, and then a longer term response in this watershed, which is, you know, on the order of 700 square miles. So we look at the coincident probability of needing to address the interior flooding at the same time as having high water levels. So we look at, you know, the water levels in the river and flow coming into the drainage area when flat gates on those storm sewers are closed, and determine whether or not we can get away with just a small storage area or if we need pumps as well.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, go ahead, Councilperson.
My questions kind of go along the lines of timing and dollars. So this slide, it says 65% federal funding, 35% non-federal. Is the federal amount fixed? And so if it, there's a on the hook for that, or are we sharing that pro rata? And then can you speak as to timing of this project? You know, frankly, the city has not the best of experiencing partnering with the federal government on a hiking trail that took 10 years to build and was many, many multiples of cost than originally estimated to be. So what happens with overall timing?
Yeah, no, I definitely completely understand. So yes, you're correct. As far as the split 65-35, we're not, since essentially these authorities that are under this CAP program, I continue operating under there. So this Section 205 has a threshold of federal dollars being able to be implemented into any particular project of $10 million. So what that means is that we still have room for, as you mentioned, any type of change orders and things like that. So you wouldn't be bearing the cost solely of any type of increase at this point in construction. Now, if we get the $10 million just for the Fed side, there would be concerns for many reasons, but joking aside, that no, there is still room for us to put federal dollars into this project up to and including that $10 million threshold. Strictly Fed side, that doesn't include your contribution, so the project could be over that $10 million theoretically. It'd be that we can only put $10 million in. Does that answer the funding component of that question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
So in regards to timing wise, so what we do, I mean, just to, you know, in general, we basically look at about six, so where we are now, as I mentioned, we have the draft partnership agreement. So right now at this time frame, we estimate 4 to 6 months to get it complete from where we are now. At that point, once we execute that partnership agreement and funding is in place, both from federal dollars and non-federal dollars to get this going, we estimate typically a year to design a project. That's just standard across the board. This could take more, could take less, but standard, we say about a year. And after that, we typically say about 1 to 2 construction seasons to finish any given project. This, again, may be outside of that realm, but I would be hard-pressed to think that this would mean more than 2 construction seasons. So if we do start in that 2023 time frame, you'd be looking at possibly 2025, 2026 finishing. But if you would tell us you're ready to move forward now, we could shrink that down. But we're trying to be cognizant of the fact that this project still falls behind those bridge projects that you guys are prioritizing right now.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. I know I kind of see some different dates out there, but I hope that the high level is 1 year to design and 1 to 2 years to implement.
Okay. Does anyone else have any questions? We do have a couple from the public if no one else has any questions. Okay. Debbie, could you read those questions off, please?
Sure can.
Thank you.
The wall does not look like it will protect water from working its way down Old Rockside Road. Can you address how the wall will prevent that? Water floods into the Cuyahoga Valley parking lot and seems like it would go down Old Rockside if not blocked somehow. Can you share how that will be prevented?
So I just wanted to show the wall, the concern is the flooding on the Old Rockside Road area with that question?
Wall does not want to go protect the Old Rockside Road, yes.
Okay, so I'm going to take a first stab at it, but Paul might be able to chime a little bit more. But you know, we have a lot of different modeling components and everything we use, and essentially this has been. And I know some of the people, especially Don, we've spent quite a few years going with various heights and elevations. But the elevations that we have now in the current design have definitely shown that we'll be able to protect on many different fronts for the flooding, especially within that area that it's designed to protect. Paul, if you want to chime in on that from a design standpoint, please do.
Sure. If you want to switch to the schematic, the plan view drawing.
This one, maybe?
The actual drawing that shows the flood.
Oh, yeah.
Bike ring.
Gotcha. There you go.
So basically, on the downstream end, the southern end, you've got on the left-hand side, you've got a closure structure for the railroad, and that closes off that opening there. And then you've got the embankment going, east-west for Rockside Road, and the flood wall connects up with the embankment there on the northern side of the embankment, goes along up to Old Rockside Road. We actually have had discussions with the bridge engineer, Bruce Snipel, and we think we might actually be able to get away without having a closure structure on Rockside Road based on their plans for the bridge and possibly just tweaking our alignment a little bit. So the bridge where it connects with the flood wall will be high enough to prevent water from getting onto the bridge or the road. And then going north from there, again, it's the flood wall transitioning to the levee all the way up and then curving back across the railroad with another railroad closure structure and then connecting up to high ground there. I hope that answers the question.
And one thing I do want to point out with that bridge, and Paul mentioned it and Paul has told me in the past, since we know that the bridge will be constructed first, our goal is to design this just to make this flood wall levee system to be seamless with the new bridge work, to make it look like it was all one big project. So our desire is to make it look, you know, aesthetically pleasing as well when we get in that regard. But I'll turn it back over to you, Don, and the city for any additional questions. But if that did not address it, please elaborate and we'll go further into detail if necessary.
Hey, Don, when is the bridge work supposed to start? Is that with the county?
Correct. Yeah, we're working to wrap up right-of-way plans and the right-of-way acquisition process very soon, such that the trees can be removed before the bath season started in the spring of this coming year. And then we'll have a full year of utility relocation. That whole pole line on the north side of Old Rockside Road has to be relocated to allow room for the temporary bridge that needs to be constructed before the demolition of the existing bridge can begin. So it's getting ready to get ramped up here, and it should be completed by the end of calendar year 22. So just in time for this levee to start.
So the bridge work would be done in 22, and then we could theoretically start the levee work in 2023?
Correct, if things go according to plan.
We have had an additional question from the public. Debbie, if you wouldn't mind reading that.
Sure. I don't understand what they mean by net reduction. What do you mean by base flood elevations by 2 feet? I don't understand the last slide.
Okay. Paul, I'm going to turn it over to you on your side. I'm going to go back to that slide.
I think that he answered the question, Paul did.
Yeah, then we've got one more from Mr. Carson.
Okay, let me find Mr. Carson's. What is the guarantee that this system is going to work? Are one-way check valves included in the estimate? There are currently drains going out the bank of the river.
Sure, so we would have flap gates on those or some sort of gauge structure on the existing stormwater outfalls and or we could potentially replace those as well.
Very good. Any other points? Because I know we do have one more agenda item. Are there anything else on this agenda item? Everybody comfortable with where we're going on this?
Jim, I have one.
Go ahead, Vice Mayor. Yeah.
Go ahead. I had one question. I know originally, way back when Valley View was part of the discussion with this, and they dropped interest and everything. When this is all, if and when this all gets constructed, will there be any negative impact, you know, on any of the part of Valley View, even though we were represented in the past? I just want to make sure that from a neighbor standpoint, this won't have a negative effect on Valley View's buildings or that.
Well, we have gone through the, we went through the NEPA process and we did get some public comments from Valley View, and I believe we addressed them pretty well. I don't think we have any slides that show anything on there, and I don't know, Paul, if you have any talking points or can speak to that flow downstream of Valley View, or if that's something we need to probably maybe get at a later date if necessary.
So I think you could go to slide six.
Six? There you go.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, so this, go ahead, Laura.
I just want to say is this blue is the existing 100-year floodplain, and then you can see the slight pink, which shows the increase, and it just shows this one area where if there is inundation, there's a maximum inundation of 40 feet, but then doing all this, there was a net reduction in the base flood elevation, so we having an updated H&H study. So it's kind of, you know, it's, we're comparing apples and tangelos. So there is a reduction, but there is a slight increase, but the floodplain will not increase.
Thank you. Anybody else? Here, one question for the engineer, if I could, just for clarification, please. Dad, I thought I heard you say after the trees are cleared, it would start a one-year utility relocation process, and then construction of the new bridge would start. But I'm confused if that would start in 2021 and utility relocation takes a year into 2022, how could the entire bridge project be completed by 2022? Or am I misunderstanding something?
No, I think you're correct, Bert. I misspoke. I think I'm looking at the schedule, and temporary bridge is in. They're saying that the removal of the old Brockside Road bridge would start in the summer of 22. Once the old bridge is down, then the new bridge would commence. So it definitely will go into 23.
Okay. We have that also.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, from the court's perspective, we realize that's still a priority, and we can shift our schedule to the right to accommodate that. That's all I was going to say.
Copy that. We have had one question from Mr. Diamond. Just to clarify, what happens to the drainage for the water coming down the hill to the industrial park?
Sure. So, I think the issue there is, where does that water go during a high flow event and when the flap gates are, other gate structure is closed. And so what we do is we're not there yet in terms of knowing exactly how that's going to be treated. We have to do an analysis to figure out, what's that 100-year event look like in terms of the combination of high water level and water coming down that hill, basically that drainage area, which is a little bit under a square mile. One thing to our advantage is that this is a very large watershed upstream of Independence, so it takes a while for a big rain event to show up at this site. Whereas the water, in the immediate drainage is going to come down sooner. Now, obviously, you can have an event where, if a storm is progressing from south to north, you might actually have a combination of high water in the river and water collecting behind that. So we look at that from a probabilistic standpoint in design to make sure that we're still able to protect that interior drainage area as well.
Okay. Would you email this presentation, please, to Debbie Beal? And Debbie, if you can send this out to council and the mayor and everybody, I'd appreciate it.
Okay.
Definitely. Yeah, no, I'll do that as soon as I'm done with this meeting. So yes, no problem.
Okay.
And I know we'll kick it over to you and be done. I just say, from the court standpoint, we've really enjoyed working on this and putting this together, and we look forward to continuing and taking this into the design and construction phase. So from our standpoint, once you guys are ready to tell us to proceed, we will. So let us know what you want us to do. So, with that said, I'll stop sharing and turn it back over to you.
Well, we appreciate that. Might be the first briefing I didn't start out with, this is a classified or a non-classified briefing I've been a part of in a while, so thank you for all your work here. Don, are you recommending this, that we go forward with this in terms of our finance committee meeting coming up here in a few minutes?
Yeah, the Corps and the cities, we've been coordinating for many, many years, and we're at a key point to make a decision to move forward with the PPA, which is really the document that binds and commits both parties to work together to implement the design and construction of this project, which has been the goal since the beginning.
Hey, Don, what will the money be needed to be set aside as far as our five-year plan goes? Because would it be like 2 years from now, 3 years we need to plan?
last for the last slide that Russ had up there, relatively minor amounts of funding. I do have.
Yeah, Don, this is Russ. I say the minor amounts to get us doing the design. I mean, from a design standpoint, which we could take a couple years to do it, total would be about $300,000, and we could break that up over a course of many quarters. So that's the lift to get through design, and then the rest would be at that before you can send it to contracting, which would be that 2023-2024 time frame once the bridge work is completed.
Correct.
Right. That won't jeopardize our standing, because I know he said the farther we go out, the more difficult it is to project if we're going to get federal funding.
Let me clarify. So once we sign that PPA and we're at a point where we agree, I should have clarified it. So if we take about a year or two to sign the project partnership agreement, that puts us in a little bit more jeopardy. Once we sign that agreement, that kind of ties us into it. It doesn't guarantee the funding, but it shows there's a commitment from your side to move forward. That does provide that incentive for that funding to be there and for better competition, even if it's that 2023-2024 time frame. So there's no guarantees, but once that PPA is signed, it looks better from a federal funding standpoint.
Very good. Because our experience with that Hemlock Trail and the federal government leaves us a little gun shy.
Understood. I completely understand, and the Congress sort of does what they want, but I understand that.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Mayor Grindel, we did just have this slide here for recollection of our five-year plan. We were more heavily loaded with some of our funding, not realizing that some of the big expenditure was coming later on, towards the end of design and before the beginning of construction. But this can be a modified, better lineup with the requirements.
Very good. Now we have a better idea. Now, Don, do we have any outlay as far as that bridge, or is the county paying the expense for that construction of the bridge?
Vice Mayor Grindel, we've been fronting invoices and getting immediately reimbursed for the work thus far, and I believe that's going to continue with the right-of-way process and with construction process.
Good.
There may be some contribution depending on the final configuration in terms of lighting, but for the most part, the county, that was part of the lawsuit that we filed with the county years ago, and we prevailed to have them take responsibility to pay for that bridge.
Very good. So, Mayor, any upgrades that we might request will be on our dime. I see. Thank you.
Well, very good. Well, in the remaining time we've got, I know, Don, that doesn't give you a whole lot, but you want to go through some of our project status and perhaps some of the issues that you'll be highlighting in the finance meeting relative to utility-related and flood control projects.
Here, Mr. Chairman, try to get through this really, really quickly, just give you an overview of a lot of the work that you've been managing with Geotech, many different locations of work that most of it stemming from some flooding concerns ongoing and here more recently in the spring with the heavy rains. So a nice smattering of work, and the costs are adding up as we're moving along. We are getting to the end of the calendar year. I want to make note of some spending issues that I'll speak to here shortly regarding some funding needs, additional funding needs. But we've moved along nicely here this past fall. And some highlights, some before and after projects. Patriots Way Culvert is something we're aware of. Before and after, it's been completed. It's a very nice improvement. And I'll speak to some reimbursement funding here shortly regarding the Regional Sewer District's participation on this project specifically. This is the agreement that we had entered into with them. So we did receive a check. Finance Department received a $46,000 check just a week or so ago. And I would request that a change order be considered to dump that money back into the Geotech contract to help pay for some of the overages that we're currently sitting at and looking at. And I would would anticipate requesting legislation here for the December council meeting to facilitate, if it's agreed upon by council.
Members of the committee, what do you think of that request? Any objections? Okay. I'd say go ahead and prepare that, Don.
Okay. The chairman?
Yes.
Chairman, could we receive some of these items that we're seeing on the screen? Be like you requested for the levy work and everything. It'd be great if it would help our understanding.
Absolutely. If you'd please do that, Don.
What was the request?
I just sent out this document that you got. If you could send that out.
Well, yeah. Especially some of the early ones when you showed all the projects they're working on, some of the costs. Mm-hmm. So we can, the first few that you had, I greatly appreciate. I think all council would appreciate having copies of that.
Okay, sure.
Very much so.
Okay, and moving along to some of the problem spots, hot spots that we've been dealing with, problematic head wall debris issue at Scenic View. Before and after, this was a live photo of a significant water running through debris that it tends to get plugged into the pipe, and we've put in a very nice trash rack with an access port to allow for easy cleaning if anything does get in there. But this should make a significant improvement with flooding conditions in that area.
That was very needed. Thank you.
Another one that was very high on our priority list was the Valley Woods 4850. This is a issue that significant shale sediment debris causes problems, and the water runs down and floods some lower properties. This is the before conditions, and we've been trying over the years to armor this with debris deflectors. This trash rack was put on a number of years ago, but it was very tight up against the wall of the head wall. We've made a significant improvement on that, got it away from the head wall and made it larger and at a lower elevation so the water could top over before it tops over the wall. This manhole structure was sitting quite high. We've lowered it and opened it up significantly with a debris cage that's 4 foot in diameter. We've also built an earthen berm back here to really force the water to really pour into this structure. And we feel like both those improvements will really armor this area and help us buy us some time and allow the debris to not cause the problems as it works its way down the hill. So it's been a nice improvement there. This structure was a, council's well aware, was the assessment project 4902. Before and after photos of the culvert. It was a dual culvert replacement and then a field paved invert. These are after pictures of the structure and the riprap rock channel protection. Here's some concrete of the lining of the invert of the pipe to help reinforce it and protect it from scour and abrasion. So that project turned out well. It's substantially complete. We have some cleanup and restoration to do. This slide, we transition over to the water main side of things. It's kind of an overview of the major improvements that we're wrapping up on in terms of water mains. These were all identified in Cleveland Water Department's assessment of our condition of our mains. Many were in poor and in very poor condition, and we've replaced a lot of those. And these are some costs and projects that, when all tallied up, we've replaced those improvement projects replaced 3.65% of our overall water distribution system, which we have over 300,000 feet of water mains in the city. But that percentage of the mains that are red that were poor or very poor, that replacement of these projects represents almost a third of all the mains in the city that were poor. So I think we made significant strides over the last year or two to increase the quality of our distribution system.
Yeah. Excellent.
And transitioning quickly to the five-year capital plan, we do know that Cleaver and Longano are on our list. We don't have them locked down per se, but we took the opportunity to submit some Ohio Public Works Commission grant applications for those projects that we knew were on our horizon. And we submitted those. They were due November 5th, I believe, and so we will hear back here before the end of the year regarding whether or not proposed or authorized for funding, but it is on our radar screen and we did submit.
Thank you. I know we pressed you there. We're close on time. Does anyone have any questions for Don Ram? And obviously we'll be talking more about this here in a few moments. Well, very good, Don. Thank you so much for everything. Are there other matters to come before the committee at this time? Okay. If we could get the information that the council's requested at subsequent time, we'd appreciate it. Is there a motion for the Utilities Committee to adjourn?
So moved.
Second. Probably second. The clerk will call the roll.
Trakas?
Aye.
Sinek?
Yes.
Paverka?
Yes.
Okay, we are adjourned at 4:31, so we did okay. And.